And so now we will begin. Okay, so we're going to learn Lee as a schus refuah shlema for Rafal Aaron HaKohen ben Rivka. And it's our sincerest hope that he has a refuah shlema b'sof sharaf olei Yisrael, as well as among all those who were injured in the events in Meiron, and unfortunately later in the events in the Tomet at Gush Etzion and in Itamar today. It should just be good things for all of Am Yisrael. Two questions, since we're dealing with Parshas Bahar B'chukosai, there are two questions that I think affect us right away. I thought they were both fascinating, and I'm curious to know your positions. Question number one, I know next year will be Shemitah. This week I received a beautiful color glossy booklet offering me a chance to buy land and therefore fulfill the mitzvah of Shemitah. Is that a scam? Must I buy land for Shemitah? And if not, should I? Then that's question number one. Question number two, I know a person is becoming Shomer Shabbos. The person asked me to guarantee that if he closes his store on Shabbos, he will not lose money. Should I make that agreement? What if I'm wrong? What's it going to do to his faith? And what will it do to mine? And of course, we've been dealing so much lately. Oh, we always deal with matters of faith, but we've been dealing so much and thinking about our own roles in faith. This was a more fascinating, different perspective on one. So those are the two questions for the week. Any particular choices for first? I think we should be able to get through both of them, but any choices for first?
They're both good.
They're both good. I get a thumbs up. I'm getting a two from Dina, so we're going to go with number two. And then we'll see. We'll go backwards. I know a person is becoming Shomer Shabbos. The person asked me to guarantee if he closes his store on Shabbos, he will not lose money. Should I make that agreement? And what if I'm wrong? What will it do to his faith? And what will it do to mine? So my dear friends, Dr. and Dr. Wenger, I actually kind of stumbled across, you know, when I saw the question, I stumbled across a story I mentioned, I think, on Shabbos in my head. The two things sort of merged together. And before I get into my answers, I'm going to be interested in yours. But to me, there's a storyline over here that comes into play. So what do people think? Should I make the deal? Should I not make the deal? No. Dr. Wenger says no. Dvorah says absolutely not. Yeah, so here I am. I'm a big rabbi. I tell people keep Shabbos. I'm a big Rebbetzin. I'm a big frum person. I'm telling people, but when the chips are down, then I'm not willing to step up to the plate. That much, I'm not willing to guarantee.
I can guarantee that Hashem will watch over him and that I will help him if he needs it, but I can't guarantee that he will lose or equal or make money. That is out of my control to go into agreement. The agreement is, I know for a fact that the Ribbono Shel Olam will watch over you and take care of you. Doesn't mean you might not lose, you might make. And then I would go with the story that I believe I heard from Rabbi Lau, or a story that you told about Rabbi Lau, or that there was in Tel Aviv, there was an Arab bakery that made pita that all the Israelis loved. They loved it. So the rabbi, if I recall correctly, it was Rabbi Lau, he could have been a different rabbi, went over to him before Pesach and said, I will pay you all your losses. Because he wanted it to close, not to be an enticement for the Israelis to eat pita, bread, on Pesach. And he closed and he paid him. The following year, the rabbi came again and said to do the same deal. He refused. He says, I've had my best year ever. All right, I will close, because he understood that for the Jewish people, Pesach is something special.
Wow.
But you cannot promise that Hashem will not make him lose money. Right. But you could help him and say, I'll be there with you. That's my point.
Shabbos, I remember right before the daf, I was sitting in this room, and I was going through one of the svarim I like to look at constantly, because, you know, it's always exciting. It's one of those svarim that, you know, it's got good stories, it's got good ideas, it's got good mini facts. I love those you know, cool background stories. It's called Otzar Plaus HaTorah. Only four volumes. It was written by a Munkacher Chassid named Rabbi Zicherman. It's fascinating. The stuff this guy puts into the Sefer is unbelievable. And I'm looking through the stuff that he decided belonged in Parshios Barbahu Kosai. And he retold the story I think I heard live many years ago when I used to work for the late great Rabbi Eli Teitelbaum, Zichrono Lebracha. Right? And he introduced the idea of a story that happened on a kibbutz called Komemiyut. Right? Of course, Komemiyut is not only relevant because of the story and Shemitah, we are also in Parshas Bechu Kosai, we find the one reference to the word Komemiyut as well. That needs to walk upright. We say every single day when we get ready to say Shema, that we ask Hashem to bring us Koma Miyut. So anyway, in the Sefer Mishnas Yosef on Masechta Shviyas, he tells a story about an individual named Rabbi Yamin Mendelssohn. Rabbi Yamin Mendelssohn was the Rav of Koma Miyut, and in 1952, Rabbi Mendelssohn, who happened to have been the son-in-law of the Belzer Rebbe, turned to his father-in-law and he said he wanted to get a bracha he wanted to get a bracha from the Belzer Rebbe because the people in Koma Miyut made an agreement that they were going to keep Shemitah Lechomer in 52. So the Rebbe says, of course we're going to go ahead and give them a bracha, and he gave them the bracha. And at the end of Shemitah, so they had kept Shemitah, and the people started looking around. They realized they had a big crisis. What was the crisis? Here they were getting ready to plant. And all the seed that they had put away from the sixth year, because they want to plant seed from the seventh year, that's usur, that's forbidden. So they decided they're going to use seed from the sixth year, but it looked like those seeds had rotted and that they weren't going to be able to germinate. And so they didn't know what to do. And Rav Mendelssohn turned around and he said, plant the seeds. We'll see what happens. You'll see there'll be bracha as well. That year, there was a terrible drought at the beginning of the eighth year, right? And in I guess it was 52 before 53. And anyone who planted crops early, all their seed went bad. And then the rains came a couple of months later. And lo and behold, these seeds that they thought had rotted and would never germinate now actually were just late. You know, and they managed to germinate, and Koma Miyut had a fantastic year financially and agriculturally. And so they said, Mendelssohn said, quite frankly, the bracha, you see, if you keep the Shemitah, there's a bracha that comes out of it. So they point out that in the Sefer, in this Mishnas Yosef, that Rav Mendelssohn was told by some of the greats of the generation, you have to retell the story. You have to make the story clear because it will encourage others to be Shomrei Shviyas. To be quite honest, yeah, but there's a danger in that. And what's the danger? What happens if somebody also goes ahead and agrees and now all of a sudden he doesn't experience the same result? What's going to happen in that under those circumstances? So the Gemara in Shabbos, Daf Samach Beis Amud Beis, turns around and makes a declaration. Where it says, in the name of Rav Chisda, Masi Melo Chafni Maya Natal Tabiyadi. He says, I was careful when I washed Netilas Yadayim to use a whole bucket, like a whole cup full, each time I wash my hands. Biyavul Yischar Mishamayim Melo Chafni Tivusa. I was able to get a full cup's worth of wealth, right? In other words, if you don't wash properly, you don't get the same bracha. Similarly, the Shulchan Aruch in Aruch Haim Simen Kufnun Chesif Yud says, Afal Pisha Shiurim Biruvias, even though the proper amount of water you're supposed to use when you wash Netilas Yadayim is but a Ruvias, Yosef Li told Beshefa, you should go ahead and wash your Netilas Yadayim with an extension. Yamar of Chista, Nar Masi Melo Chafni Maya, Viabuli Melo Chafni Tivusa. So you see that there was supposed to be this great big bracha that came about because you washed your hands properly. The Chavetz Chaim comes along over here in Sif Katan Lamed Ches, and he says, Mikom Akom L'chadchila Tov Yoser Shelo Yaseh B'Shvil Zeh. When you wash Netilas Yadayim, it shouldn't be just to become wealthy, right? You got to be very careful. That should not be the reason you do it. Dehu Amanas L'Kabel Pras. He says it's against the Mishnah Pirkei Avos. The Mishnah Pirkei Avos in the first parak says, Al Tiyu Ka'avadim HaMisham Shen HaSarav Amanas L'Kabel Pras. Eliyasa hakol lekavod Hashem yisbarach. The reason why we do what we do should be for the honor of Hashem. Basachar memela yavo. And then what's going to happen? Let the reward come when it comes, right? Now here's the critical line from the Mishnah Berurah. And what if the bracha doesn't come? So listen to this line. Misha zahir bazeh. What happens to the person who's careful to wash netilas yadayim with a huge amount of water? Veina masasher, and he doesn't become wealthy. So the Mishnah Berurah says, how do you explain that? He says, hum ipnei shemahasav me'akvin. He has to understand that his actions are holding him back. And now we have a lot of different examples of things that make people wealthy. We have a lot of different discussions as to how a person can become wealthy, right? But the Gemara Bava Metzia, Daf Nun Tes Amud Aleph says, if a person is careful to have kavod for his wife, it's a source of bracha, right? Now, if I have a farmer who is careful with shvius, but is not nice to his wife, or a guy who washes netilas yadayim with huge cups of water, but he's not nice to his wife, right? So what's going to happen over here? So the Mishnah Berurah says, in such a situation, maybe he won't get the bracha in that situation. And so clearly there are certain brachos that are provided to people who keep certain mitzvos. That's what we see in the Gemara, right? Shabbos, if you're careful to keep Shabbos, so you get schar kenachla b'li mitzarim, right? Unrestricted. If you keep Shvi'as, HaKadosh Baruch Hu will make sure you don't lose and you become wealthy. But if that's the case, what happens when you keep only some of the things on the list and not other things on the list? So who says that there'll be a bracha in such a situation? Similarly, the Gemara also says in Shabbos on Daf Kuf Yud Tes, if you're careful to separate Meiser, we quote this all the time, right? Aser to Aser. But the Gemara says in Babel there's Zocha, because they show honor to the Torah. Right? And other places, they show honor to the Shabbos. In Lukia, there was a guy who was a wealthy butcher who got wealthy because he honored Shabbos. But what if a person keeps Shabbos and not Shemitah or Meiser? What would be the story over there? And so based on all this, Rav Zilberstein was asked the question in this month's Vavei HaAmudim, and he says, look, with all these different conflicts in mind, making a promise or a guarantee to somebody who says, I'll keep Shabbos or Shemitah, look, maybe he deserves the bracha for that, but maybe he won't get the schar in the way that he expects to because of other things that will be held back. Or maybe it won't come in the exact moment he expects it to come. Or maybe it'll come in a different formula because of the things that hold himself back. And so for you to go ahead and guarantee, you're going to wind up shattering his faith, says Rabbi Zilberstein and the Wengers. And so therefore, I don't recommend it, says Rabbi Zilberstein. And then he says, but I was interested, so I discussed it with my brother-in-law. Who is Rav Zilberstein's brother-in-law? So he is Rav Chaim Kanievsky Shalita. What is the excitement about Rav Chaim Kanievsky? People come from all over the world to ask Rav Chaim for brachos. And what does he tell all of them? Buha! Buha! Bracha v'hatzlacha. Right, that you should have success. And he says, look, the bottom line is that if the public nature of the mitzvah brings on Kiddush Hashem, then you have a right to go ahead and offer the bracha. But be very careful. And so therefore, I'm not so sure I would be the one who makes the guarantee. I think we should point it out. I also think we should point out all the other additional components. There are a lot. Give a person the mini shear over here. Yes, if you keep Shemitah, if you keep Shabbos, you're going to get rewarded. How you're going to get rewarded is dependent on a whole host of things. But that's not a reason not to be Shomer Shabbos. Yes, the promise is the promise. And there are a lot of stories of people who did deserve. And that will put a certain perspective in people's lives and give them a certain style. So that's the first question. You want to go on to the other one today? It's also a relatively short one. Yes? Yes. Good. So I got mine. I'm pretty sure you'll start to get them too. Internet notes. So eventually they'll be coming in as color glossies, right? About the chance to buy land in Israel to observe the mitzvah of Shemitah, right? Now I get these internet offers constantly because, you know, I can get one to go ahead and own a flock of sheep so I can do reishis hageis, and I can get one to go into a vineyard so I can separate trumos, maizros, and peret and ololos and all sorts of other things. I always tell the people who run these things, stay away from my brother, because my brother will show up and actually want to be there when you're doing it so that he can get a piece of the mitzvah. My brother shares a winery with some guy. He owns a small percentage of the winery. I used to say to him, that's a good thing for you to invest in the winter, right? But, I don't think he really appreciates my sense of humor anymore. So I thought that was, an exciting thing. But to put it into context, there is a fundamental difference in my head. First of all, I think we see it more in Shemitah, right? I just don't see it all year long. I don't see it as much. The year of Shemitah, the year before Shemitah, and I think you're going to start seeing it a lot more in the next 2-3 months, right? I think you're going to see that offer much, much, much clearer. Why do you think you see it more during Shemitah? So I believe it's because the people who are keeping Shemitah are trying to find a way for them to go ahead and earn a couple of bucks. After all, why not? They're taking the year off. They're not going to be able to plant anything. So before I get into the idea of is it a good thing or a bad thing, all right, I need you to understand what are the angles of the question we have to look at. Well, I guess I just threw one on the table. Is it a scam, right? Is it a scam? Do you really own the land or not? Let's say we can guarantee that you do own a piece of the land. Would it be a good idea or not? What else do we have to consider?
Well, you are chutzpah aretz, so is the mitzvah that you do in chutzpah aretz?
Very, very, very good. So I'll twist your question in about 4 different directions, and I think you nailed them all. The first question I have to ask you is there a mitzvah to own land just to stop working on it? I know there's a mitzvah to do mitzvos, right? And let me give you a for instance. Every Shabbos, right? Every Shabbos. We say v'shamru lo sasa kol melacha ata uvincho vitecha avdecha va'amascha uvehemtecha. Now let me ask you a question. Slavery is outlawed in the United States of America, so the idea of buying slaves just to be able to fulfill lo sasa kol melacha avdecha va'amascha, I understand. But should I go upstate New York and buy a cow? Right, I'm going to call the guy who owns the kosher farm up in the mountains. I'm going to say to him, do me a favor. I'd like to buy into your cow. How come I don't see glossies for that? Isn't it the same thing? How come the guy in the kosher farm up in the Catskills hasn't come up with a great gimmick? Right, he'll get all the Jews who go up to the Catskills for the summer, right, and he'll get them all to go ahead and buy little different aspects of the mitzvah of Shvisas Behemto. Let his behemah take a year off or a day off. And that way I'll get the schar and you'll get the schar. How come nobody came up with that yet?
But at the same time, there's a issue of tzar ba'alei chayim.
What's the tzar?
Those cows have to be milked even on Shabbat.
Yeah, listen, Doc, in Kibbutz Chafetz Chaim, they solved that crisis. And I'm pretty sure if they came up with the crisis in Kibbutz Chafetz Chaim, they can come up with a solution on the kosher farm up in upstate New York. That doesn't bother me because, well, when there's a will, there's a way. But how come I don't? We brought a guy in many years ago. He's a friend of Ora Scheinson's, who made maple syrup, and he came as a scholar in residence one Shabbos, right? Rabbi Samanowitz, I think was his name. Very nice fellow, right? And he owned a farm. He owns chickens and he owns goats and he spoke to us. This is going back many, many, many years. So this guy, I assume he keeps Shabbos. He's I assume his animals keep Shabbos. I assume he solves the problem of a cholev. But I don't know anybody who, I don't think Ora Scheinson buys into his farm. I don't think that you and I buy into the farm. How come nobody came up with the idea of going ahead to help poor Rabbi Samanowitz by going ahead and telling him we'll all buy into his cow so that we all can fulfill the mitzvah of having our animals not work on Shabbos? And the answer is because we just don't. There's no obligation for me to go buy an animal just for it not to do something, right? And from where do we understand this idea that I should become chayav in a mitzvah? Like Doc said, the other issue I want to look at is, why do I need to buy into something to become chayiv in a mitzvah that I'm already exempted? Right? I don't own land in Israel, so who says I have to go ahead and become chayiv just to fulfill the mitzvah? So Moshe Rabbeinu. You know Moshe Rabbeinu. Moshe Rabbeinu in Parshas Vaeschanan, daven to Hashem. Vaeschanan el Hashem, right? Baisahile Mor, the Medrash tells us that Moshe davened a ridiculously large number of tefillos to Hashem. For what reason? To be able to go into the land of Israel. So Gemara asks a question. What do you mean? You think he wanted to go in just to eat the fruits of the land? That's crazy. Why did Moshe Rabbeinu daven so hard and offer over 1,200 tefillos in order to be able to go into the land? So God said, Ravlach. And the answer is because he wanted to observe the mitzvos hatluyos ba'aretz. He wanted the opportunity to go in, right? It seems that it, at least as far as Moshe Rabbeinu is concerned, one should try to fulfill the mitzvos hatluyos ba'aretz. On the other hand, Hashem told him no, right? And in fact, God told him no. I guess God's also offering an opinion. And what's that? You're not chayiv, right? God wasn't taking away the, on the one hand, Moshe desired something, but on the other hand, clearly God said no. And when God says no, was he going to deny you the opportunity to do the mitzvah? The thing is that there's a minchas chinuch, and the minchas chinuch in mitzvah tes deals with a parallel question that we all just dealt with. Let's say we have the following situation. It's Erev Pesach, right? I look around my house and I realize I have no chametz left. Do I have a mitzvah to buy chametz? Excuse me, just to go ahead and burn the chametz. Do I have a mitzvah because of Tashbisu? Think about it. Devorah's laughing, right? She's smiling because she realized, wait a second, like that's crazy. You already did Tashbisu, right? You did the mitzvah already. So what's going on over here, right? We're going to buy a mitzvah just to get rid of it? So according to one side in the Minchas Chinuch's argument, yeah, maybe a person has an obligation to go ahead and buy something that he's not going to, just not to be able to have it. But Rav Asher Weiss breaks down, he says, we never find an obligation. If there's an obligation for that, that doesn't parallel our case. And why is that? Tashbisu is an active mitzvah, right? Maybe I'm buying something to do something. On the other hand, we never ever find an obligation where the main aspect of the mitzvah is not doing an action. This is Rav Usher's argument. So you're talking about a shev al tasa, right? Doing nothing. Shav sa'aret, shabas la'shem. You're doing nothing at all, right? So the Chazan Ish in Hilchos Demai, Bei Zion, he talks about, he says, that's not so. We have a mitzvah called Bi'ur Meiser. It happens in the fourth and the seventh year, right? And we say, Bi'arti HaKodesh Min HaBayis. And what if I don't have any Meiser left in my house, right? So in such a situation, maybe there's a Midas Chasidus, like there is a Midas Chasidus, there may be a Midas Chasidus by Chametz on Pesach, right, to get some meiser just to get rid of it. So Rav Asher Weiss comes back to that argument and he says, first of all, that's called midas chasidus. I can't get into that, right? That's first of all. Second of all, he says, it's a midas chasidus to purchase, to go ahead and do something active. You're buying it to do tashbisu. You're also buying by the meiser to go ahead and actively fulfill the responsibility of clearing it out, right? And so he says, therefore, there's no comparison to our case where the person's buying a piece of land that's fallow, right? He's not doing anything. So how could you tell him he has a responsibility to go ahead and do so? There is a comment of the Vilna Gaon in Maisa Arav, who apparently... They say the Vilna Gaon bought a Bechor Behema Temeah, and he said Shachianu, so he could give it over to a Kohen, even though we don't give the Karban to Hashem, a Bechor to Hashem these days. And again, Rav Asher says, I don't get it. That's a Kumase also. It's a get up and do mitzvah, as opposed to what we're talking about, which is a just have it and don't do anything mitzvah. He says, maybe to buy something to get up and do, I can argue for a Midas Chasidus. But here, he says, I don't even understand how a person would be able to go ahead. He says, this is more like the buying into the animals of Rabbi Simanowitz or the farm, right? He says, nobody does that either. And this is the reason why nobody does it. If I don't own farm animals, I'm not obligated to have my animals rest. Yes, and if you don't own a piece of land in Israel, you're not obligated to do Shemitah. And Rav Asher adds, by the way, who says that you don't fulfill the mitzvah of Shemitah? Who says that a person has to have his own land in order for Shemitah to happen? Maybe Shemitah is something that happens in general, right? And just the person who violates it by working the land has a problem. Otherwise, we all get the same mitzvah with Shemitah. And so therefore, although there are many poskim who think this is a great, wonderful idea, Rav Asher Weiss says, I'm not among them. I'm not among them. He says, I'll tell you another reason why. While you go ahead and purchase this land as part of this great financial gimmick, you are making a big mistake because you're also denying yourself from the opportunity to do a bigger active mitzvah. And what's that? I've got all these farmers. They're out of work. What am I going to do? What active mitzvah can I do for them for this year? How about giving them some money and calling it
tzedakah,
right? Says Rav Asher says, let me tell you a secret. It is human nature to think to themselves, I'm going to buy this tiny piece of land. Let's say they sell it to you $180. I think that was the going rate 7 years ago, right? I'm going to say to myself, I gave $180. Now, but on the other hand, I might reach into my pocket a little bit further, right, to help the farmers. If four farmers come by, or if I find out that the farmers need a little bit more, maybe I wind up giving more and taking care of more because, look, I don't live there. So I should reach out and give a little bit more to help the farmers who are more indigent. When a person winds up going ahead and thinking, no, but I'm doing Shemitah just like you're doing Shemitah. I'm suffering in the same way you are suffering, right, Farmer O. McDonald, right? No, so a person tends to give less. So he says, I just want to tell you, you're giving up an active overt mitzvah. Don't give up the active overt mitzvah in order for you to be able to go ahead and do something that you're not obligated to do in the first place. But to say it's aser, no, it's not aser. To say it's a gimmick, there are many poskim who think that it's a nice thing, probably because they're looking at it not as actually being involved in the mitzvah shemitah. My guess is they're assuming that the profits are going over to help the farmers anyway. Rav Asher says, just help the farmers. That's an active mitzvah. It's called tzedakah. Don't hide behind a chumrah. Sometimes every chumrah you take on has a kula in another place. In this situation, I think the kula is going to come down to the kula in the mitzvah of tzedakah. Better you should give the tzedakah instead. So we basically, to go over, tonight we learned, maybe you see the glossy photos, give to the tzedakah. You don't have an obligation to go ahead and buy the land of Shemitah. And, you know, on the other side of it, when it comes to a person being asking you to promise them for the future, I think you should teach them the rules of the game. The rules of the game are, we do the best we can in our Shmiras HaTorah V'Mitzvos. God makes promises to those people who are Shomer, but I can't be the one to stand up for it because he also makes more than one obligation upon us. And how he will give the schar, that's between you and him. So I wish you all a wonderful Shabbos and an exciting Yom Yerushalayim Sameach. And with God's help, we'll see each other again real soon. I may have a big surprise for a guest speaker next week, and we'll see very, very soon. Everyone have a wonderful Shabbos.
Very good.
Right. Thank you.
Thank you. Shabbat Shalom.